Chicago Theater of the Air presents the world's greatest operettas for the world's greatest radio audience. Another gala Saturday evening, ladies and gentlemen, as WGN and the Mutual Network bring you the program beloved by all America, recreating the romance and melody, the songs and stories of the world's musical stage. Our speaker is Colonel Robert R. McCormick. Our stars are Marion Clare, Eugene Conley, Bruce Foote, John McDonald, and Ruth Slater. Our musical director is Henry Weber, and our program is adapted for radio and produced by Jack LaFrandre. Tonight, the Chicago Theater of the Air presents a special adaptation of an immortal grand opera by Charles François Gounod, the intensely human grand opera, Faust. Opera Faust is the tragic but melodically beautiful story of a man who sold his soul to the devil and a lovely girl who gave her heart to that man. It's an old, old legend that has been told and retold through the centuries, yet it has never failed to stimulate the imaginations of its vast audiences across the universe. However, before closing our eyes to the charms of ancient make-believe, let us open them wide on the stark reality and cold facts of present-day America. And in that direction, few Americans living today are better acquainted with the reality and fact of this country of ours than our distinguished speaker of this and all Chicago Theater of the Air broadcast. It is our proud privilege to present him now, noted historian, civic authority, and editor and publisher of the Chicago Tribune. Ladies and gentlemen, an address on the freedom of the press by Colonel Robert R. McCormick.
Freedom of expression is one of the natural rights of man. As long ago as the 5th century B.C., Euripides wrote, "This is true liberty, when free-born men, having to advise the public, makes speak free, which he who can and will deserves high praise. Who neither can nor will may hold his peace. What can be juster than this?" But his views were not to prevail for more than 2,000 years. Socrates was executed for expressing views distasteful to the government of Athens. But according to Benjamin Franklin, it was, I quote, "Augustus Caesar, who under the specious pretext of preserving the character of the Romans from defamation, introduced a law whereby libeling was involved in the penalties of treason against the state. This law established his tyranny, and for one mischief which it prevented, 10,000 evils, horrible and afflicting, sprang up in its place. Thenceforward, every person's life and fortune depended on the vile breath of informers. The construction of words, being arbitrary, and left to the decision of the judges, no man could write or open his mouth without being in danger of forfeiting his head. One was put to death for inserting in his history the praises of Brutus. Another for saying, 'Cassius was the last of the Romans.' The Middle Ages are called the Dark Ages. They were not so ignorant that Roman law was not known. We find that this law of Augustus was copied in the British laws of treason of Richard II and Henry VIII. Efforts at freeing expression labored feebly through the ages. In 1644, Milton used the famous phrase, 'Give me liberty to know, to utter, and to argue freely according to my conscience, above all other liberties.' But he did not get that liberty. The settlers of the colonies, as we have seen, were refugees from a number of persecutions. From early settlement, they were united against the royal governors and the royal judges.
Thus it was that Friedrich's speech came to the colonies in 1728, when a jury following the argument of Andrew Hamilton refused to convict Peter Zenger, charged with libeling the governor of New York. The people of the colonies were now so greatly incensed at their royal governors and judges as to make convictions impossible, so that in 1731, Franklin could write, "Freedom of speech is a principal pillar of a free government. When this support is taken away, the constitution of a free society is dissolved and tyranny is erected on its ruins." The fight for more liberal treatment of the press in England was on. Let it be impressed upon your mind. Let it be instilled into your children that liberty of the press is the palladium of all civil, political, and religious rights of free men, wrote Junior, the anonymous critic of the government in 1772. But he received no liberty and had to remain anonymous to save his life. By this time, Tom Paine's Common Sense was circulating freely in the colonies, and of this Washington wrote, "By private letters which I have lately received from Virginia, I find Common Sense is working a powerful change there in the minds of many men." And in June 1776 wrote Jefferson, "Printing presses shall be free, except so far as by commission of private injury, cause may be given of private action." That very month, the state of Virginia first established liberty of the press under the new state constitution as follows: that the freedom of the press is one of the great bulwarks of liberty and can never be restrained but by despotic government. Next, in the Massachusetts Bill of Rights of 1782, the liberty of the press is essential to the security of freedom in a state, and it ought not, therefore, to be restricted in this commonwealth. When the Constitution was adopted in 1787, it only sought to prevent the Roman-British definition of treason, and therefore adopted Article 3, Section 3, defining treason, and copying the statute of Queen Mary on that subject, the sentence requiring two witnesses to the same overt act. Other methods of abridging freedom of speech in England had included licensing, censorship, libel upon government, prohibition of publishing the proceedings of Parliament, and burdensome taxation. In order to prevent the introduction of these methods of abridgment, or of others that might be devised, the First Amendment to the Constitution said, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances." This federal amendment was drawn by the same men who had written the Virginia and Massachusetts paragraphs, and therefore it must be held to contain every guarantee in the Virginia and Massachusetts constitutions. Of the reasons which compelled the framing of the amendment, Jefferson said, "Special provision has been made by one of the amendments to the Constitution, which expressly declares, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, thereby guarding in the same sentence, and under the same word, the freedom of religion, of speech, and of the press, insomuch that whatever violates either throws down the sanctuary which covers the others." So came the immortal instrument which for the first time in the history of the world guaranteed freedom of speech and of the press. Next week, we will learn how its injunctions have been observed in the intervening years.
Colonel Robert R. McCormick, editor and publisher of the Chicago Tribune, has been heard in another informal address to the people of these United States. For your copy of tonight's talk, which will well repay further study, write to station WGN, Chicago. Now the principals and orchestra, cast and chorus have taken their places on the studio stage. The grand opera Faust is about to be performed. And our prima donna, Miss Marion Clare, will be heard as the beautiful Marguerite, who gives her heart to Faust, the pawn of the devil. Faust himself will be sung by Eugene Conway. Marguerite's brother, Valentine, will be sung by Bruce Foote. And the voices of Ruth Slater and John McDonald will be heard in supporting roles. Now, Mr. Henry Weber conducts the WGN Symphony Orchestra in the prologue music to Charles-François Gounod's Faust. centuries ago. An aged and dejected man sits in his study and looks longingly out over the village square through his open window. The old man is Dr. Faust, the learned philosopher. It is with heavy heart that he listens to the song of the young people of the village and realizes that such song and gaiety have long since passed him by.
Vigor is gone. Joy has never found me. If only I could shed this tired old body, purge myself of all this useless learning.
Learning is never useless, Dr. Faust.
Who are you?
I am only a vision, Dr. Faust. Surely your knowledge must tell you that.
A vision? Only? Yes. Yes, I see you now. I see you.
Only a vision. But still, I am all that your studies have taken away from you. I am femininity, Dr. Faust. Your young womanhood that is the quest of all mankind. The desire of all you.
Oh,
if you only had your youth again, I could be real. Real, Dr. Faust. Not just a vision.
Real.
Real, Dr. Faust. Real. Real. Real.
For a moment, I thought she was real. It seemed as though I was standing at her side. No, I'm still in my study. I don't even know her name.
Her name is Marguerite, Dr. Faust.
Oh. Look. You are frightening her away.
What do I see on your desk, Dr. Faust? Is it a vial of poison?
Yes. Yes, I'd almost made up my mind. There's nothing to live for now. But who are you?
You say there is nothing to live for? Think again, Dr. Faust. What of the vision of Marguerite?
But do you know her? I saw her, but I don't see you.
You think I fear to meet you face to face? You underestimate me, Dr. Faust. You find me quite visible at the moment, I trust.
I know you now. Mephistopheles.
You flatter me, Doctor. I am honored. Most people don't recognize me so quickly.
What can the devil want with me?
Don't look so startled, Doctor.
I have not manifested myself to plague you. Just make known your desires, and I'm at your service.
My desires? For what purpose are you willing to help me?
Not entirely altruistic, I assure you. I am very much interested in your soul, Doctor.
My soul? You mean...
If you will sign your soul over to me in blood, so that you will be mine after death, I am yours to command in this life anything you desire.
No, no, it is sacrilege. Leave my study. Leave it at once.
Look, Dr. Faust.
Look.
Look again at the vision before.
I am waiting, Dr. Faust. I am waiting.
She's come back. She's come back to me. No. No, she's gone.
Not for you, Doctor. Not for you.
It will take youth to make her yours, Doctor.
You can give me that youth.
As I said, on the condition that you sign your soul.
Give me the pen, the fish, though. Give me the pen. There. There, my half of the pact is signed, Mephistopheles. What about you?
To be sure. The first step is youth, Doctor. Youth and fine raiment. Youth and handsome features. Drink, Doctor. Drink of the nectar of youth.
Give me the goblet.
I'm quite pleased with my client. Look at yourself now, Doctor. What? Look in yonder mirror.
I'm young. Young with the same joy and rapture as my Marguerite of a vision. Take me to her, Mephistopheles. Take me to her.
Behind the joy, the beauty, the grand, the grand, the grand, the grand, the grand, the grand, the
that he would serve Faust as long as he remains on earth, Mephistopheles leads the rejuvenated philosopher among the singing youth of the village. They find Marguerite talking to her brother, the soldier Valentine. Hearing from behind a nearby tree, Faust gave him a glance at the amazing beauty.
Said she'd be mine.
A moment, Faust, one moment.
But I...
Can't you see that her doting brother is with her? Oh. Just let me handle this. I'll find a way. Stay behind the tree and lift.
War. You, Valentine. You must go to war.
Yes, Marguerite, my beloved sister, it is true. And there are many things that even the bravest heart regrets leaving behind. I cannot take care of you while I'm away. But your neighbor Martha will watch over you.
Oh, Valentine, I know our country needs you, and you must go away. But I'll miss you. I'll miss you.
Even bravest heart may swell. to glory, so call me. I still will be first in the fray. As blithe as a knight in his bridal array. As a knight in his bridal array. Careless what fate may befall me.
Blasphemy, Marguerite, vision of pure beauty and youth, and Faust, horn of the devil.
The vision.
Oh.
You are the girl of my vision. I'm sure of it now.
Why do you talk so strangely? And what do you want of me, my lord?
Understand what is in my heart. Please come back.
Well, Doctor, it appears that Marguerite has other interests, doesn't it?
What can I do, Mephisto? How can I make her love me?
I'm disappointed in you, Faust. Must I teach you to make love, too? Go to her. Pour out your heart. In the meantime, I'll work on a few plans of my own.
So it is that a love-struck Faust stands in the garden of the girl of his vision. There's his heart for a beautiful aria.
All hail the dwelling pure and lonely. All hail the dwelling pure and lonely. Home of an angel fair and holy. All mortal beauty excelling. What wealth is here, a wealth of bidding gold, for the peace and the love and innocence untold. What wealth is here? A wealth of peace and love outbidding gold. Of peace and love and
thank you.
who spoke. I heard someone, I'm sure I did.
Who I am is of no consequence. Someone who loves you since the jewels. Someone who waits in your garden now.
Marguerite, do you hear me?
Oh.
Go to him, Marguerite. Go to him, Antoine.
Oh. Martha. Martha, come with me, please. I don't know what to do.
Running to her neighbor, Martha, Marguerite tells her of Faust's ardent suit and the jewels that have been sent her. Martha's overjoyed at Marguerite's good fortune and accompanies the blushing girl to the garden, where they find Faust and Mephistopheles waiting for them.
Marguerite, my Marguerite, you have come to me.
You laugh at me? You think I am foolish, Lily?
Foolish? Oh, no, not foolish. Beautiful, Marguerite. Shadows of the night begin to fall. Faust draws Marguerite aside, leaving Martha and Mephistopheles alone. Soon, the spirit of evil manages to elude Martha, and alone in a distant corner of the garden, he sings his incantation. Marguerite and Faust are now absorbed in a world of their own, a magic world of love and ecstasy. It is late and they realize that they must leave each other's arms. They're both reluctant to say the final goodnight.
I must go now. I must.
No, no, please. Please stay.
Let me go. Let me go. On the vision before me, let me gaze on the vision here before me. By the lying of light from yon pale star of night that so fondly thine enchanting sight.
Oh, what rapture, what joy, it was spread up enchanting me like a thrill of healing.
Marguerite returns to her cottage, but Mephistopheles detains Faust outside of her window.
Stay a while longer, Faust. You do not know the mind of woman as I do.
But she said good night. She said... Look!
There she is.
Aye, in the window. She has come to the window, Mephisto.
Behold, she opens it.
Oh. She looks this way. Can it be?
Why?
And Marguerite realize it. Months that heap scorn and shame on Marguerite as her love affair with Faust becomes a major topic of conversation throughout the village.
Oh, Lord, deliver me from my tormentors.
And kneeling in church with other troubled souls, Marguerite raises her voice to heaven and prays forgiveness.
Thank you.
even the tragedy of illicit love cannot overshadow Marguerite's affection for her brother Valentine as the soldier comes marching home. All the girls in the village rush to meet their husbands and sweethearts, join them in triumph and song. Valentine learns of Faust's betrayal of Marguerite and rushes at the devil's pawn with drawn sword.
Draw your weapon, Faust! I will avenge my sister's betrayal or die in the attempt.
Valentine, let me explain.
Hold on there, Valentine. It was I who instigated this thing. It's I am the one who has drawn sword. You, Mrs. Copley.
No. No, stand back, Valentine. Please stand back.
Mrs. Copley, to anyone else, I will not stand back now. All right. If it is death you want, death it will be.
Oh, no!
Valentine! Valentine!
Oh,
only the devil himself could have gotten through my guard. Only the devil himself.
Forgive me, Valentine. Please forgive me.
Oh, too late now, Marguerite. Too late now.
Valentine!
Thank you.
Valentine, come back to me. I need you. I need you.
For Marguerite, tragedy now runs swiftly to its climax. Having gone completely insane after her brother's violent death, she's drowned the child that came of her faithlessness and is now in prison, condemned to die. Faust, broken-hearted and still very much in love, has come to her prison cell in a desperate effort to carry her off with him. He's followed, of course, by Mephistopheles, who sees his half of the bargain for Faust's soul getting nearer and nearer consummation.
Who's there?
Quiet, my love. We've bribed the guard and have horses waiting. We must hurry.
Have pity on me. Please let me live. It is but midnight and you've come for me already.
Marguerite.
Even tomorrow is soon enough. I'm so young to die. I was once beautiful.
Don't you know me, Marguerite?
I... Yes. Can't
you? Oh, yes, yes, goodbye, my love. You recognize me now.
Hurry, Faust, hurry. If the dawn breaks, they find you here, you will die as well as she. Remember our bargain.
Marguerite, please come. Please come with us at once.
I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do.
The day begins to break, Faust. Come before it's too late.
Away from the prison, the morning is risen. Hark with hopes resounding, my horse is below and stamping the ground. Come, let us go. Perchance there is yet time to save her.
I can never leave him.
Never leave? Oh, you are as much devil as he. Father in heaven, please.
Dr. Faust, your soul is mine. You are mine at last.
Marguerite.
Father in heaven, forgive
Marguerite. Marguerite.
You are mine, Faust. All mine.
curtain falls on a special Chicago Theater of the Air presentation of Charles Faust Balduno's Grand Opera Faust, adapted for radio and produced by Jack LaFonda. Applause for Miss Marion Clare, who sang the role of Marguerite, for Eugene Connolly, who was Faust, and also for Bruce Putter's Valentine, John McDonald as Mephistopheles, Ruth Slater as Martha. For our conductor, Henry Weber, and a tribute to our speaker of the evening, Colonel Robert R. McCormick, editor and publisher of the Chicago Tribune. Tonight's all-star, all-Chicago dramatic cast. You heard Marvin Miller as Faust, John Barclay as Mephistopheles, Lorette Philbrand as Marguerite, Fred Morrison as narrator, Charles Penman as Valentine, and Carl Conkey as the voice from heaven. Next week, the Chicago Theater of the Air will bring you a special streamlined radio adaptation of Victor Herbert's memorable operetta, The Red Mill. Tonight's music rights were from the Tams Whitmark Music Library. Marvin Miller speaking. This is Mutual.